The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Mrs. Rachel Schmuckler now presents her lecture, Get to Know Your Soul's Personality.
Okay, here's a question for you. Discrimination, is it good or bad? Now that's a loaded question, but discrimination can be a wonderful thing. And what does that mean? In order to treat another human being properly, you have to be able to discriminate. What do they need? You can't feed the same meal to a newborn baby as you do to an adult. We need a proper sense of discernment, really, in order to know how to best treat and accommodate another human being. So as we embark on this journey of learning new things about ourselves, some prejudices could happen. So I'm going to forewarn you so you know what to look out for. And one of them is, be like me. We'll start seeing some traits and we'll realize like, yeah, now I know what the difference is between me and my sister. She should have been more like me. And the other syndrome we're going to avoid is be like everyone else. And that is when sometimes we're the odd one out. We feel like we should have adjusted ourselves to be more like everybody else. So of course, neither of those are healthy. We each have to look at our own strengths and our weaknesses and know where they're best used. Personality type does not determine our behavior. Who determines our behavior? And I once asked that in a high school class, and the answer was Hashem. No, Hashem does not determine our behavior. This is a fundamental principle of Jewish faith. This is from Maimonides. Freedom of choice has been granted to every man. This concept is a fundamental principle and a pillar of the Torah and its commandments. So we have a certain personality type. It doesn't force us to act a certain way. A lot of us don't want to be closeted or confined to a certain box, and we say, I don't want to have a personality type because that means I'm stuck to being one way. Actually, no. When you know who you are freer to be who you are not. So if you know you have a certain weakness, like you may be an introverted person who doesn't want to get up and talk in front of an audience, you say, you know, this is something important that I would like to share. So now you can go ahead and do something that you would not naturally do. You are going to be the one in charge of your personality. And here's a great saying from the famous Hasidic master, Rabbi Nachum Mendel of Kutsk. If I am I because you are you, and you are you because I, then I am not I, and you are not you. But if I am I because I, and you are you because you are you, then I am I, and you are you. So as we're going to go along this journey, there could be progressive stages of awareness. The first one is, my way is the only way, and I am right. That's how we kind of all start out. That baby in the crib just trying to figure out that it's maybe they're not the center of the universe, which in fact, we really are the center of the universe. As soon as we get our ego out of the way, then we're the center of the universe. As soon as we become a channel to the divine, we're a center to the universe. But in our limited egocentric space, we have to remember that this is wrong. Next, we say, yep, it's all about personality. I know our approaches are useful, but mine is the best. You move beyond that and you say, you know what, I need to hear what others have to say so I can get a more complete picture. And finally, when we get mature and broad-minded and we realize how much we can pool together, we say there are many different perspectives. How can we make the most of our pools of gifts together? So I used to give a personality test. It might even be the book that you have. The reason why I don't do that anymore is because a lot of times people mistype themselves on the test. They answer in the way they would like to be. And I would say about 50% of the time, the tests come out wrong. So instead of doing that, we're going to have a working hypothesis. I'm going to give you a little brief over here, not enough to understand, but just enough to guess. And then we're going to move forward and we'll get into it. Okay? So the first thing that we're looking at is you have a page and has four letter code. The first thing that we're looking at is, where do you get your energy? Okay? If you get your energy from external stimulus, that means people and things outside of yourself, you would give yourself an E for the first box, an extroversion. If you get your energy from within yourself, then you would give yourself an I in that first box for introvert. Again, you're not going to know enough just from this. This is a working hypothesis. We're trying to figure it out, and then we're going to work on it together. Okay, so for your first letter, you're going to have either an E or an I. The next thing that we're looking at is, which information do you most readily notice? Do you notice concrete reality, the world that is, and then you would give yourself an S for sensing? Or are you a person who's always in the world of brainstorming and possibilities, what could be? And then you would give yourself an N for intuition. We already used the I, that's why we're using an N now. So by now you should have two letters, E and I in the first box, E or I in the first box, S or N in the second box. And the third thing that we're looking at is evaluation style. How do you make a decision? Are you naturally objective, so it's about true or false? Or are you naturally subjective, and that's not what we wrote here because it doesn't sound right, but personal values, agreeable or disagreeable? How does that feel to me? If you're naturally objective, then you would give yourself a T for thinking. This is not about IQ, by the way. If you're naturally a person who sides with other people and notices where somebody else needs empathy more easily, you give yourself an F for feeling. And now you have three letters, E or I, S or N, T or F, and finally, direction of energy. Are you a person who needs to come to a conclusion? You want to see a decision made, you want to see things done. You give yourself a J for judging. Are you a person who needs to constantly take in information and doesn't want to feel stuck on having a firm decision? Then give yourself a P for perceiving. By now, we have four letters. So that's your hypothesis. Okay, now we're going to look at these traits more carefully. The first thing that we're looking at is E or I, extroversion or introversion. An extrovert needs to experience the world in order to understand it, while an introvert needs to understand the world in order to experience it. And let's talk about it. Extroverts initiate. They are comfortable initiating relationships. It's much more easy for an extrovert to walk over to a total stranger, strike up a conversation, say hello. They're energized by interaction with others. They're often drained by too much solitude. So it actually makes them feel tired by having too much solitude. They actively engage with the environment even when they're alone. So you put your extroverted child in a room and say, hey, could you study here and focus for the next half hour? They're never just sitting there and focusing. They're touching the table, they're touching the pencil. They have to engage with the environment. That's what grabs them. They have a breadth of interest. They not like to know a little about a lot of different things. And they're fairly easy to get to know because they think out loud. They tend to speak and act and then reflect. So if you're a teacher and your extroverted student says something way off the wall, instead of getting mad right away, you can give them another chance to try that again because they were literally just processing out loud. Now we're looking at introverts. And I have to say that people, especially in America, people type themselves as an extrovert even when they're an introvert because that's what's culturally accepted in America. And also people say, I need people. I know I need people, so that's why I gave myself an E for extrovert. Guess what? We all need people. Every normal human being needs other people. Maimonides, in his introduction to the Talmud, talks about the most perfect man who reaches the pinnacle of knowledge of God. And he said, most people will never reach that space. So what's the purpose of all of humanity who never reaches that space? And he gives two reasons. One reason, he said, is one man can't possibly weave all his own clothes, bake all his own bread. There has to be a complete society in order to support this one kernel of truth. And therefore, the rest of humanity exists to serve this human being who's coming to know Hashem. And then he said, I'm going to give you another reason. And this reason might seem trivial to you, but it actually is much more important than the first reason. Remember, the first reason, so the guy should have shelter, he should have food. That's pretty important, right? He says, the second reason is, and this seems trivial, but it's very, very important, is to remove boredom and desolation from him. How bored and desolate, isolated and sad would it be that lone man if the rest of society did not exist? So that's just to underscore the point that we all need people, extrovert or introvert. And now we're looking at the introvert. Introverts, remember that we said extroverts initiate, introverts respond. They tend to gather information before initiating relationships. They're energized by solitary activities and often drained by too much interaction. So again, everybody needs people, but at a certain point, the introvert has had enough. They're drained and they need time to just recoup. They often disengage with the environment even when they're with others. So an introvert can even feel alone in a crowd. They have a depth of interest, so when they want to know something about something, they can go deeper and deeper and deeper and sit with it still, as opposed to the extrovert who wants to know a little about a lot of different things. And they're a little harder to get to know. They tend to think before speaking. They reflect and then speak and act. So it's harder for an introvert to just go ahead and make a phone call. They first want to think, well, I'm going to say this, and then she's going to say that. Process it first before it actually comes out of their mouth. Now that we looked at those two traits, do a reality check on your working hypothesis. Do I identify more with E or I? And can adjust your code as necessary. That was the first box, E or I. Okay. Extroverts and introverts, these are the biases. The fact is that when people are like us, we come to identify with them more. Yes, they say opposites attract. They also say birds of one feather flock together. They did a very interesting study of this community in Northern California where the parents were so liberal and so tolerant, and their children were acting prejudiced, and they wondered, where did they pick up these prejudiced beliefs from? And they did this study where they put these little kids, some of them every day to school in a blue shirt, some of them every day to school in a red shirt. And it turned out that they started liking the people with the same color shirt. It just so happens that that's how people are. So we have biases against people who are different than us. So this is how extroverts might see introverts. Extroverts might see introverts as being secretive and too private, aloof and unfriendly, guarded and self-conscious, slow and uncooperative. These are the biases, which may sometimes be true, and socially uneasy. And extroverts, if you think you got off easy, this is how introverts might see you, and that is too talkative, inclined to pretty much verbalize anything, just say anything that comes out of their mouth, intrusive and pushy, superficial and insincere, hyperactive and overwhelming, and I might have cut out the last one, which was, oh, rude and bossy. So these are the biases, which may sometimes be true. On the other hand, these are the gifts. Extroverts can usually think on their feet and give a quick response. So they're up there and somebody asks them a question and boom, the answer comes out of their mouth almost without them having to process. They can often multitask well and they're easily sociable. Introverts, on the other hand, are usually able to concentrate for longer periods of time. They're often well thought out. They often make good listeners, and they tend to give others their space, but don't talk to an introvert while they're measuring ingredients. Okay, here's how to speak another language. If you're an introvert, here's how to make an extrovert feel comfortable. Let them talk and think out loud, include a few different topics, communicate verbally, and expect immediate action. An extrovert often feels shunned or ignored if you're not communicating verbally. If you see two people sitting on the couch and they're quiet and they both look happy, chances are you're looking at two introverts. An extrovert who's sitting next to somebody who's not talking to them often feels ignored. Oh, one more thing, keep the conversation moving. Relate to an introvert. Ask, then listen carefully. You know, sometimes an extrovert will ask a question and then turn up the music. Wait, didn't you just ask something? Talk about one thing at a time. Communicate in writing if possible. So if you want to know if they want to go out with you or to dinner or something, don't pick them up at the phone and say, hey, do you want to go out for dinner? Text. Give them enough time and quietude to think things through. So you may ask a question and then feel uncomfortable with the silence. That's them processing. So expect that. And don't finish their sentences. So these are how an introvert, extrovert relate to each other. Okay, now we're looking at a difference that most people don't notice, but people in the type community consider to be the biggest difference between people, and that is sensor or intuitive. Which information do you most naturally notice? A sensor sees the facts and notices what they actually are. An intuitive sees the facts and wonder what they truly mean. Sensors, we're going to talk about it. Sensors are about 65% of the American population. They're practical, factual, realistic. They have a clear, straightforward speech pattern. So one to two to three, one thing naturally follows the other, logically. They like an established ways of doing things. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. They're good at observing actualities at the expense of the imagination. They're often more aware of their bodies. They're patient with routine details and precision work. They might be bored and uncomfortable with deep conversations. They usually remember the past accurately, and they're very aware of what other people say and do. They're gifted in the art of living in the present. They know how to be here. They're comfortable in their bodies. They're comfortable with the present. They know how to be here. Intuitives, on the other hand, are about 35% of the American population. They're restlessly inventive, innovative, and original. They're more in their heads. They have a more complex speech pattern because one thing reminds them of another thing, which reminds them of another thing, and you're like, but what are you talking about? They're imaginative at the expense of observation. So you can have a brilliant architect designing a gorgeous palace, and his own roof is leaking above his head, and yet he doesn't notice. They dislike taking time for precision work. I don't think anybody reads instructions anymore, but once upon a time before putting together the kid's tricycle, somebody did. It wasn't the intuitive. They enjoy deep discussions. They talk about global issues, the big picture. They might miss important facts, and so you might think your intuitive kid is lying. No, they just didn't even notice that fact. They're independently indifferent to what others say and do. They often don't even know what other people are saying and doing. And they prefer the joy of enterprise and achievement and pay little or no capacity to the art of living in the present. They have a small capacity for living life as it is. So the saying is, if you put a sensor in four walls, without four walls, the sensor feels sick. If you put intuitive in four walls, all they want to know is, how do I get out of here? They have very little capacity for being in the here and now. Okay, time to adjust your code. Do I identify more with E, S, or N? S for sensor, which is the practical, realistic, factual. N for intuitive, which is imaginative, mystical, creative. By the way, there's creative people of all types. It's a different type of creativity. It's a creativity of seeing what's not actually here and envisioning it, while the sensor creativity is taking things that are here and putting it together in a whole new way of art. Okay. Here are the biases. Sensors might see intuitives as being flighty and erratic, unrealistic, impractical, having their heads in the clouds, too complicated and theoretical. I see some people laughing. Intuitives, on the other hand, might see sensors as being unimaginative and uncreative, boring, resistant to change, lacking vision, and simplistic. These are the gifts. Sensors naturally apply experience to problems. They walk into a situation and say, hey, we've encountered this before. What did we do? Can we do that again? Intuitives often don't remember that they've had that problem. They easily notice what needs attention now, and they're more likely to be engaged in the present. Intuitives, on the other hand, are happy to supply ingenuity on problems. If a new problem comes up, they can tackle it with zest. They're like, ah, problem, battery juice. They like to bring up new possibilities, and they easily read the signs of coming change. Because intuitives are future-oriented, they can see patterns and they can see what's coming up. Okay, this is how an intuitive relates to a sensor. State the topic clearly, say what you are talking about. Present facts and actual examples. Theory on its own doesn't work for a sensor. If you want them to buy in, you have to give how this is practical. Present information step by step, stress practical applications again, and finish your sentences. They don't want to have to do the guesswork. Say what it is that you're talking about. Draw on past real experiences. Okay, sensors, how to relate to an intuitive. Talk about the big picture and what it implies. Talk about possibilities. Use analogies and metaphors. Brainstorm options. Engage them, engage their imagination. And here's an important one. Don't overwhelm them with the details. They usually don't care what date George Washington did such and such unless it has to do with their project, and they can find details very overwhelming. So unless it has to do with what they're talking about, don't overwhelm them with the details. Okay, reality check. Adjust your code as necessary. Do I identify more with S or N? This is your second letter. Okay, now we're looking at the only gender bias difference, because most are 50-50, but here there is a bias for, there are more men thinkers and women feelers, but by all means, there are plenty of women thinkers and plenty of male feelers, and it doesn't mean that the man is less masculine or that the woman is less feminine. Male brains are male brains and female brains are female brains. There is a professor at UCLA who's in systems and robotics, and he's very into this stuff, and he looked at brains of men and women, thinkers and feelers, and showed them a horror film. And he wanted to see how they reacted. All of the men, thinking and feeling, looked at that film and took it in as information. All of the women, thinking and feeling, looked at that film and showed contempt and disgust. So the male brain is a male brain and the female brain is a female brain, but this is a personality difference, and most men are thinkers, most women are feelers, and we'll talk about it. A thinker looks for the logic and truth in your words. So you're speaking, the thinker is thinking, does she know what she's talking about? Is this true? A feeler looks for the feelings and hidden messages in your words. You say, what does she imply? What does that mean? Was she trying to hint something to me that she couldn't say? Thinkers are more likely to be male. They value logic above sentiment. If forced between truth and tact, will usually be truthful. So most people would like to be truthful and tactful, but if that there's a force that you can't be both truthful and tactful, the thinker will just say, you know what, I really don't like that shirt. They might seem insensitive. They might be blunt and tactless. They may argue or debate for fun. They give praise sparingly, and they're usually more assertive. So this is the thinker. Oh, sorry, one more thing, impersonal language. Which, by the way, because women are socialized to be feelers, even women thinkers will be very, might be very warm and gushy, and you think, hey, they're a feeler. No, that's socialization. Okay, feelers are more likely to be female. They value sentiment above logic. If forced between truth and tact, will usually be tactful, so they might say that little white lie so that they don't hurt your feelings. They act warmer and friendlier towards others. They're usually gentle and diplomatic. They avoid arguments, conflict, and confrontation. So if they've had a logical debate with someone, they don't feel comfortable just going out for lunch after that. Like, that was hurtful. I can't. They have their feelings hurt more easily. They might lack assertiveness. They may use more personal language. Okay, reality check. Do I identify more with T or F? That's the third letter. So by now you should have three letters. Look at your third and see which one you identify more readily with. Okay, these are the biases. Thinkers might see feelers as being illogical, over-emotional, weak, dramatic. I used to have hysterical, but I think I took that out. Feelers might see thinkers as being cold, insensitive, uncaring, and hard-hearted. These are the biases. Doesn't mean they're true, but they could be true. These are the gifts. Thinkers tend to analyze a situation dispassionately. So it's easier for a thinker to look at the situation, pull themselves out of the picture, and say, these are the pros, these are the cons, what are we going to do? They more easily hold consistently to a policy, so a thinking mom has an easier time saying bedtime is bedtime. They more easily resist opposition. Feelers naturally forecast how others will feel. So when they're making a decision, part of that decision is how is that going to make other people feel? That's part of their equation because they know in a certain sense how that is. A thinker may seem unkind by not taking that into consideration because it's just not on their radar. They more easily arouse enthusiasm from others, and they readily reconcile differences. They don't want to be in a fight. Okay, here's how a feeler can relate to a thinker. Be logical and organized. Make sure you have your facts straight. Appeal to their sense of fairness. Be straightforward. Don't ask personal questions. And don't repeat yourself. Thinkers don't like when people repeat themselves. Okay, thinker, this is how to relate to a feeler. First, mention points of agreement. If you disagree about something, first talk about where you are the same, where you hold together. Appreciate their efforts and contributions. Recognize that feelings are legitimate. Talk about people concerns. Smile and maintain good eye contact. And one more, be nice. Okay, this one doesn't seem to be such a big difference between people, but it can be huge if you carpool together. A judger doesn't want to change plans without a good reason. A perceiver doesn't want to commit to a plan without a good reason. Judgers like things settled, seeking closure for closure's sake. So the person who said, better a bad decision than no decision, definitely a judger. They tend to enter a situation having already anticipated how it will be and settle on an action before the event. I'm going to walk into the glasses store, I'm going to spend 5 minutes, I think there's going to be a good pair of glasses, and I'm out of there. Prefer to plan ahead and follow the plan. They like to live a more structured life. And they schedule and organize projects and tasks to avoid anxiety and overload. So everybody has a certain anxiety that they want to avoid. For the judger, it's, I don't want everything crashing in on me last minute, so I plan backwards. If I have to be there at this time, then an hour before I do this and 2 hours before I do that. Perceivers, on the other hand, they like being adaptive, going with the flow. They tend to be responsive to new information as it comes. So they might have decided, but then there's new information, so their decision may change based on that. They prefer to keep options open for change and adaptation, letting life happen. They are energized by deadlines and last-minute rushes, so you see them like running around last minute right before their book of prayer. Help, 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 help. Yeah. They access many projects and tasks randomly in order to avoid the anxiety of missing opportunities. So we said the judger doesn't want the anxiety of overload last minute. They don't want to miss an opportunity. So why would I say yes when I know that something else might come up? So leaving that open, that don't want to feel restricted. Okay, time to adjust your code. This is the last letter of the four. You should now have a J or a P. J is for our scheduler, and P is for our spontaneous person. Okay, these are the biases. Are you ready? Because they're strong. Judgers might see perceivers as being lazy or unproductive, chronically late, not serious enough, irresponsible, and unreliable. Too indecisive. Perceivers might see judgers as being rigid and unyielding, stressed out, controlling, apt to regard things as too black and white, too quick to decide. And these are the gifts. Judgers are usually reliable and responsible. If they told you they'll be there at a certain time, you usually can count on that. They typically come to a decision easily, and they tend to be hardworking and diligent. Perceivers are usually able to consider a situation from various angles. So Albert Einstein, genius that he was able to see it from this side and from that side and from that side, turn on a dime, which is important if you really want to be able to see things clearly. They're usually adaptable and laid back, and they tend to be more patient and tolerant of other people. So these are the gifts, judgers and perceivers. Perceivers, this is how you relate to a judger. Be on time and be prepared. Come to conclusions, don't leave issues unresolved. Be decisive and definitive. Maybe is not an answer. Be organized and efficient, don't waste their time. Stick with the plans made. Judgers, this is how you relate to a perceiver. Expect a lot of questions. Don't force them to decide prematurely. Provide opportunities to discuss options and change plans. You can say, you know what, we can decide for now, and if you ever feel like we have to change that, we can change that. They feel less stuck like that. Be open to new information. Usually after a judger decides, they can't revisit that decision. The decision is made and I don't want to think about it anymore. Sometimes you have to be able to think about it again. Oh, this is very important. Don't breathe down their neck. Okay, this is a quote from the Hasidic master of Zusha of Anapoli, and he said, if it were offered to me to exchange places with Abraham, our father, I would refuse. What would God gain from this? He would still have one Zusha and one Abraham. And the point is, if Hashem created you, it's because he needs you. So you're going to choose which member of the cast you are. Hashem chose you. What a great position. And now we're going to do something very interesting, because the four letters are just not four letters. They work together in synergy. You know, when you put something together, it becomes more than the sum of its parts. Like you're making a chocolate cake and you put eggs and cocoa and sugar and flour. Now it's not just eggs, cocoa, sugar, flour. Something new came, a chocolate cake. So we're going to put these pieces together and we're going to realize that we have certain letters together. It gives us a certain core temperament. And the first temperament that we're looking at are the SPs, the improvisers. So if your second letter is S and your fourth letter is P, that would put you in this group of people known as the improvisers, also known as artisans. They tend to be fun-loving, optimistic, realistic, focused on the here and now. They pride themselves on being unconventional, bold, and spontaneous. They make playful spouses, creative parents, and troubleshooting leaders. So I once met this feisty woman, and I wonder what she did for a job. She was an improviser right out of the book. And she told me she's a party planner, and she always hires 20% more waitresses than she actually needs because she knows 20 of them will not show. 20% of them are not going to show up. Troubleshooting leader. That's the way she thinks. What stresses them out is constraint, boredom, and lack of impact. When they're stressed, they don't get mad, they get even, they strike back, they can become reckless. To get them out of that place of stress, they need recognition and finding new options. So even an introvert of this temperament likes getting a reaction, needs a lot more attention maybe than other people. They need to be able to get a reaction. If you have a child of this temperament, don't keep threatening them because they want to see just how far they can go till you make good on your threat. New and exciting activities get them out of that place of stress. Now we're looking at the stabilizers, the sensing judgers. If your second letter is S and your last letter is J, that would put you in this temperament. They're also known as guardians. They tend to be dutiful, cautious, humble, and focused on credentials and traditions. They pride themselves on being dependable, helpful, hardworking. They make loyal spouses, responsible parents, and stabilizing leaders. As parents, they want to know that their children know how to act properly in a social setting. As a leader, they want to know that the country's finances are covered and things are done in a certain stable way. What stresses them out is abandonment, instability, lack of belonging. When they're stressed, they complain. They become sick, sorry, tired, worried. What gets them out of this place of stress is appreciation. Say thank you. We basically never say thank you to these people who are the bedrock of society. They literally keep society running and they go unnoticed. They need to get thank you. They need to be included in the news and activities. Even if they will not be in town when you're making that bar mitzvah, send them the invitation. Renewed membership and group involvement. They like hierarchy, be part of a group. Okay, if your second letter is N and your middle letter is T, that would put you in the group of people known as the theorists, also known as rationals. They tend to be pragmatic, self-contained, focused on problem solving and systems analysis. They dream of understanding how the world works. They pride themselves on being ingenious, independent, and strong-willed. They make stimulating spouses, they're known as the mind mates, individualizing parents, which means they don't necessarily want their kid to be a clone of them. They want them to be their best self, and even if not, that's not what their teacher likes. They may often get a lot of phone calls from the school. And strategic leaders, strategists. What stresses them the most is feeling powerless, incompetent, having a lack of knowledge. When they're stressed, they obsess, they become mindless, they can become haunted. Antidotes for stress is reconfirmation of competence. People have to remind them that they're actually very competent. A new project to tackle is another thing that gets them out of that space. Here's a new thing to work on. Apply your ingenuity to this. And now we're looking at the intuitive feelers. If your second letter is an N and your third letter is F, that would put you in this group of the catalysts or the idealists. They're enthusiastic. They trust their intuition. They seek their true self, and they prize meaningful relationships. They dream of attaining wisdom. They make intense spouse. These are the soulmates. Nurturing parents, what they care most about is their child's self-esteem. Don't start up with their child's self-esteem. And inspirational leaders, they start almost from the ground up speaking to people's heart. What stresses them out is insincerity and betrayal, lack of meaning, lack of integrity. When they're stressed, they disassociate, they become phony. So they figure, I can't be true to everybody else, and to myself, I'll be true to myself and put a facade for everybody else. And sometimes they do some interesting things, like they won't even notice somebody that they don't like. They have something that they want to talk about, but they can't talk about it, so they do something called grasshopping, where they talk a little bit about it and quickly change the subject, a little bit about it, and then you have to realize, one second, there's this little drop that keeps showing up that I better pay attention to. What gets them out of this place of stress is affirmation and nurturing from self and others. They have to be able to remind themselves. This doesn't work for all people, but for idealists, catalysts, it works for them to say to themselves, I have these special qualities. I am unique, reminding themselves. And of course, they need that from others too. They need a renewed sense of meaning and purpose. Hey, there's more than one way. And here's a quote from the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, who said, the man of strength, one with unshakable confidence in his reasoning, must leave his thoughts. He's not to insist. I say so. This is what I think. Every I, ego, is a source of evil, a cause of divisiveness. Remember, we all have a black hole, a certain void that's just never going to be full, like a bottomless pit. Theorists will never have enough knowledge, competence, or achievement, no matter how much they already have. Idealists will never feel that they have reached the ultimate in love and connection. Improvisers can never get as much adventure, excitement, or variety as they crave. And stabilizers will never be able to get others to be as responsible and organized as they'd like them to be. You can never completely fill somebody else's void. But you can use your new awareness to bring more joy and understanding to somebody else. There is only one you, and you are not your personality type. You are a pure divine soul. And this is a saying from the Mishnah. Ani nivresi l'shamesh iskaini. I was created to serve my master. There's a story of the Rosh Yeshiva who wrote a letter to the Rebbe in distress that he was never going to become anything important. This was when he was a young teenager. And he wrote this letter to other great thinkers, Jewish leaders at that time. They said, okay, so you'll be a supporter of Jewish scholars. And the Rebbe wrote back to him and said, that's not the reason why you were created to write genius books at a young age. The Mishnah says, Ani nivresi l'shamesh eskaini. I was created to serve my master. Take the gifts that you have, continue learning. And indeed, he became one of the greatest scholars and geniuses of our time. So that's our motto. Why was I created? To serve Hashem. Whatever gifts he gave us, we use to serve him. Now, go be yourself. Okay, so we have an excellent question here, and it's about couples, about marriage. On one hand, it would seem, you know, we hear opposites attract. On the other hand, we're saying birds of one feather flock together. And based on this, it seems like the more you have in common, the easier your relationship is. So first of all, and this may not be so in vogue in today's day and age, men and women are opposites. So that is definitely opposite enough. You don't necessarily have to go seeking out differences. Now, let's look at a relationship where the two people have a lot in common. What's the bonus of that relationship? They easily relate to each other and understand each other. Most couples do not have all four traits in common. 10% of couples have no traits in common. 10% of couples have all traits in common. And then everywhere else is somewhere in the middle. Usually people share two traits. I once spoke to this older couple. I knew them for years. They are literally the same exact personality type, two peas in a pod. And then she watched me grow up, and she asked me about some of the things I'm interested in, and I was telling her about personality type. And she said, wow, so what do you have to say about us? We are so opposite. We're the exact opposite. I was like, really? So aren't you guys both like very, very practical? Wouldn't you say, yeah, we're both very practical. Aren't you guys both like logical and analytical? Oh, yes, for sure. Aren't you guys both super punctual? Yes, for sure. Oh, maybe we're not opposite. So, I mean, there's many things that make people opposite, different backgrounds, different upbringings, and of course, the biggest difference is man and woman. That's an important difference. But if a couple has very little in common, then what's the bonus in that? And that is balance. So, you know, one person has a strength or the other person has a weakness, and that works when there's a lot of respect. I know some couples who are very, very different, and they get along very well because they know, I don't understand it, but I respect it. That's the way they are. I know she's just never going to show up on time, so I'm going to get mad at her every single time she comes late. She just doesn't come on time. What am I going to do? Or I know that she's, you know, very in the clouds, so I'm going to expect her to always be focused and practical. It's just, you know, instead, you have to realize that everything is a flip side. Yeah, they don't come on time, but they're patient, they're tolerant, they're easygoing. Do you realize that it's all intertwined? It's a one package deal. You don't get this and not that. There's a story of the Rebbe. Somebody was asking advice for finding a match, and I think it was the mother who gave a list of all the things she was looking for, you know, the prospective bride. And the Rebbe looked at that list and said, it looks like you're looking for your son to marry a few different women. You know, not certain traits come together and certain traits exclude each other. So the best marriage advice that I have is respect. First of all, respect. And respect comes from humility. Realize that we think we're the end all be all, and really Hashem is the end all be all. And we can see the divinity in another person and respect that and cherish that. You know, in the beginning, I'm getting to you in a second. In the beginning, it's just about like tolerating. And then it's like, wait, there's so much more to that. And then it's about celebrating, realizing like, wow, look what they have that I don't have. This is something to cherish and love. Yes, you had a question. Well, Myers-Briggs is like the letters. And then there's, of course, David Kiersey's temperaments, which is that. And then there's something else that we didn't touch upon because it's just too much. And then there's Linda Barron's interaction styles. And when you put all those things together, let's say like somebody's not sure, am I an introvert or am I an extrovert? It's not just the introvert or extrovert. You look at a different interaction style and see. If you would be an introvert, you would have, let's look at an ISTP versus an ESTP. They can't figure out, I like people, I talk, that wouldn't be a good example because they're usually very introverted, but just for argument's sake. So you say, I like people, I like to be with people, I think I'm an E. And Well, let's look at the interaction style. If you're an ISTP, then you're a planner. You chart the course. You have a certain way of making a plan and then following that plan, even if you allow for deviation. If you're an ESTP, you're an in-charge person who likes to tell other people what to do and mobilize forces. Now, that becomes a big difference. So you can look at that and say, okay, well, you know what? I identify more with this interaction style rather than that interaction style. And these papers that I have for you are just little blurbs on each one, but it will also tell you, I think, let me just double check, other ones to consider if you're not sure. So the question is, should we be striving for a middle ground? And absolutely, in the sense that, you know, if somebody is naturally a thinker, so they're naturally blunt and honest, you don't, there's times where that's called for, there's times where that's completely uncalled for, so you work towards achieving balance. But on the other hand, when somebody is like undifferentiated, they just don't know who they are, they haven't yet honed in on any of their skills or talents, that's not a compliment. So their skill for thinking should be very well developed by the time you reach a certain age. You know, and vice versa, the skill for feeling, if that's it. But we should work for balance, of course, in all areas. Some of things will be easier for us to achieve than others, depending on our hierarchy of traits. Everybody has intuition, sensing, thinking, feeling. Depending on your personality type, it will come in a different order. If your strength is intuition, your weakness is sensing. So you can't expect to have the same level of attention to detail and being practical and factual ever as an amazing sensor. That just doesn't happen. It's like a mathematical equation, you know? Let's say you start out with a 5. And then you put in a 5 effort. So 5 times 5 equals 25. Let's say you start out with a 1 and you put in a 5 effort. So 5 times 1 is 5. So you have to be work towards balance, but also realize that in certain areas, you're just never going to achieve perfection. And for that, you compensate. So you have a core self and a contextual self. Like, you know, you have to be, you can't just say, I'm a perceiver, so I just never show up on time. No, responsible perceivers show up on time where they have to be on time, and then wherever else, they just kind of slack off, and that's fine. But as we grow, we develop strengths in areas where we're not proficient, but our core self doesn't change. Our personality type, like, you know, the way you were when you were 2, that's your personality type. And of course, you grow, you develop, you know, take on competencies that you didn't used to have, but however your natural self is, that's your personality type. And this might be able to help you. Like, if you look at the different ones, you know, there's all different kinds of nice songs, but then a certain song just, like, kind of speaks to your soul. One of these is going to be like, oh my gosh, this is me. You know, we're humans. We relate to all of them. All of us need stability, and all of us need some level of spontaneity, most of us. And all of us need, like, meaningful relationships, and everybody wants a certain amount of knowledge, but is, like, that you? Like, for a person who's a theorist, let's say, their knowledge is them. It's not like people don't understand. It's like, oh, they have good ideas, and then, no, actually, their work, their play, it's all one thing. It's just, that's knowledge. You know, and for other people, they like knowledge, but, you know, for them, barbecue is better. Yes. So let's say that you are somebody who naturally is very sensitive. So you find yourself, like, easily hurt, you know, by people's statements all the time. Well, you now that you know that about yourself, you realize, you know what? I'm going into this knowing that I'm going to have this conversation, and I know that it may feel hurtful to me, but I'm going to act as if I have a higher level of resilience than I do. So you're putting up as if a front, and it's what you need to do for that situation. I think we're done. I have papers here for everyone.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.